Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
One, two, three.
Wait. What's the first line again?
Help.
Oh, yeah.
One, two.
Help!
No, wait.
Sorry.
One, two, three, four.
Help, help. I need somebody.
I'm leaving.
That's in the can, Pete. It's in the can. It's in the can.
It's a wrap.
Shut up, Kim.
Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you're one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really, really glad to have you. That was a little bit of Bananarama and their song Help, which I thought was very appropriate because we're going to get a lot of help tonight, which is very important when it comes to relationships because, as we all know, it is hard work. And tonight's show focuses on relationship sabotageurs. In the heterosexual Cinderella world, boy meets girl, boy dates girl, boy and girl move in together, boy and girl might get married, boy and girl might have babies and live happily ever after, right? Well, it's what we all aspire to. And in the real world relationships, we're constantly tested and sometimes we sabotage them, either by ourselves or by our partners. And I'm very, very excited tonight because I've got Dr. Randi Gunther on and she's the author of Relationship Sabotageurs. And she's joining us tonight for tonight's edition of Sexy in Van City Radio, where we talk about all things sexy in Van City and around the world to chat about how to overcome the 10 behaviors that undermine love so that we can live a little bit happier in the happily ever after. So, Randi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. And I even right from the back of the book when you sent it to me, which thank you so much, it blows me away. You've spent over 90,000 face-to-face hours helping individuals and couples with their relationships.
Yes.
And that's over 40 years worth, and that's incredible. So you have a lot to say, and I'm so excited that you've written the book. And as you're mentioning before the show, which we'll talk to our listeners about a little bit later, you've got more books coming up, which I'm very excited to hear about. So
thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you've said that there's 10 behaviors that undermine love. Do you want to talk a little bit to them? Because you've listed them as insecurity, needing to control, fear of intimacy, needing to win, pessimism, needing to be center stage, addictions, martyrdom, defensiveness, and deal breakers. And what I wanted to do with that, if this feels okay with you, is just touching about that, just basically starting from boy meets girl.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And just in terms of right from the get-go, what are some things that we can do right from the top of a relationship, even within ourselves, before we even get to one, to basically do some self-care beforehand, perhaps?
Well, you know, the things that all people in the world are excited by and interested in, whether it's a male or a female, is confidence and people who are kind of in love with life. The opposite of that is, you know, people that are needy or frightened or hungry or insecure are not only more vulnerable to other people or people who are, you know, predators, but those relationships don't go along with being sexy, exciting people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out in the world looking for a relationship to complete you or looking for a relationship, once I fall in love, then I'll be, you know, it's probably not going to work very well because you're not going to attract the kind of person that you're going to want to be with 6 months after that.
That's true.
You know, you may be coming out of the rain into a single-room house, but it's going to get tight in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having the patience, the real patience, to be in the moment and to be loving life and letting relationship come out of that is hard for most of us to do.
It is.
But those are the relationships that end up lasting and exciting. Everybody wants to be with someone who's not looking, but who's in love with life. They want to be with people who you know, express that in everything they do.
So people who are
that's
really
hard
passionate.
To do when you've been hurt. It's hard to do when you've had a number of relationships that haven't worked. It's easy for people to get bitter. But those are not the things that say to another person, hey, look, I learned a lot. I've grown a lot. I always say to people, you know, to a woman, never date a man who has an angry woman behind him or a woman who has an angry man. You're going to have to compensate for that person for all they did that was wrong. So even when you go through a relationship, you want to end up afterwards. You know, I learned something. I'm better. I'm more evolved. I understand myself better. I know what to do. So when you meet a new person, you say, yeah, I may have had some failures, but I'm okay. I'm ready to go again. Those kinds of ways of being in the world are attractive. They're always attractive.
And it's very passionate as well, where it's taking care of self. And as you said, just really, really taking that time to evaluate. And this is going to sound really terrible, but basically shrink back down to your natural size as opposed to being the us, just letting yourself be you again and seeing who that is and actually taking the time perhaps to date yourself before
you
start dating someone
else. And if they don't learn from things, then the past absolutely defines the future. And people just keep doing the same things over and over again. Unfortunately, people get better at what they practice. And if they practice unhappiness, they get better at it.
So what happens if somebody has been doing this for a really, really, really long time? How would you recommend in terms of breaking some of those habits right from the get-go?
The thing about my book that is important, there are two things. One is that it's not gender-related.
Mm-hmm.
After the 90s when we had unisex and everybody forgot how to be different and excited, a lot of writers came in and talked about, you know, men are different from women in this way, in this way, in this way, in this way. And, you know, the tallest person is male and the shortest is female, but there are lots of women taller than lots of men. So even though there are certain characteristics that sort of cluster around testosterone and estrogen, in a lot of ways, men and women are, when you get very down deep inside, are very much more similar.
Okay.
And so when I talk about, you know, I purposely and sort of in a way almost mischievously, you know, looked at martyrs as men and need to control as women just to mix it up a little so people can lose some of their stereotypes and be a little bit more open. So, of course, at the beginning of the book, it's like, well, you know, you have to, if you're going to learn anything, you cannot judge yourself. So you have to learn to get rid of the internal voices that you have from childhood or past relationships that defeat you. Those internal voices of how can I be so stupid or why would I do something like that, you have to go down deep inside and learn that you're never going to get anywhere if you're going to judge yourself all the time. So the past is not for remorse or for regret. It's for lessons and learning. just like the future is not for fear, it's for adventure and for possibilities.
Hmm.
So I take people in my book from the beginning, go back, follow your taproots to childhood. Where did you learn these behaviors? Who modeled them for you? Who told you that that was the way to behave? How did you integrate them? So the book goes back into the past and then says, you know, what are the triggers in the present that set off those childhood behaviors? And when are you most susceptible to those triggers? And then practice behaviors that you can do instead. And when the triggers happen, catch them early, change those behaviors and practice those. And then find people who will support you in your new behaviors. Because very often, we keep marrying the same counter-saboteur over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And we just continue to, you know, rescuers are attracted to insecure people. My book says essentially that many of these behaviors are almost attractive at the beginning of a relationship.
You mentioned that.
Well, they are. Like a pessimist attracts a cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, I'll be the one who will change you. You know, this time you're not going to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, those pom-poms get heavy. Like, you're still unhappy? You know, I've been trying to make you happy now for all these months, and you're still unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that sense, if you do the same behavior over and over again, as I said, you just get more and more discouraged. You can turn around and decide what you're going to do, check those triggers, make sure you are know when you're susceptible, change the behavior, get people to support you, and then stay on track.
So
and the book gives those 7 steps of how to do that with each of these behaviors.
Which I think
and, you know,
is...
I actually started out with almost 20 of them, and because of space and people get tired of reading, I just dropped them down to the most common.
Mm-hmm.
But the book really tells you that these steps apply to any behavior, that at the beginning of the relationship works and over time creates in your partner an allergy to what you're doing. So, you know, what they liked at the beginning, all of a sudden they can't stand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the relationship breaks up and you say, but wait a minute, you liked this at the beginning. What's wrong now? Like a person who's very quiet loves a center stage person.
Mm.
But after a while, when you want to say something, there's no room for you because you've established a pattern where you have no place.
Understood.
You see, so, and very often, sabotaging people attract other sabotaging people, but that's okay, because if they get it and they're both sick of it, they can really turn it around. I'm an incurable optimist. You know, my practical idealist, I've helped so many people look at things in a way they've never looked at it before,
mm-hmm.
and they break out of these patterns, and then they're excited.
So it's a very...
They can see a different future.
So it's a very cognitive style in terms of getting the support to actually changing the thought, like starting from the get-go at recognizing what the thought is, going in and changing it, so then that way that changes how they feel?
Absolutely changes, because what you're catching is you're catching your triggers before they
mm-hmm.
cascade into those old behaviors. You're making sure you understand them, you can see them coming,
mm-hmm.
and then you have an alternative behavior that you're practicing. And you know, if you've got people you really care about who care about you who are not benefiting from indulging you in those terrible destructive behaviors, you know, they can catch you at it. And you've got to have people to support you when you're ready to change.
And
everybody needs that. You have to have mirrors to reflect back your courage.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, anybody can get discouraged. It's hard, and you're going to slip. Everybody slips. It doesn't matter. If you stay on track, it's eventually going to swish over. I've seen it, you know, hundreds of times. I'm not talking about something that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about something that really works. And it's exciting for me. I mean, I've been doing this so long. I love doing it more today than I ever did before because I see the changes in people, and it's so thrilling.
And especially when it comes down to love and relationships.
Oh, absolutely. And then you see people saying, you know, I didn't know I could do this. Or, you know, I didn't realize it was my grandmother who taught me to be a martyr. How did
mm-hmm.
that happen? You know, every time I told her something happy, she told me something was going to go wrong. You know, no wonder I learned to be a pessimist.
No, exactly.
She told me the evil I would get me if I didn't. So you have to understand where they came from, because those you know, inner taproots really, really come up, especially unconsciously. They just drive us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wonderful to find them. And people, they feel so liberated now. You know, it's like, oh my, I've never looked at it this way before. Well, of course there's an alternative.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the key things in terms of the steps that you mentioned, is it's recognizing what it is and actually seeing it where it's like, I've never seen it that way before, mm-hmm. but actually taking the courage to change and getting that support so that they
Without
can change.
Without self, you know, you just can't go in and say, oh, I'm just this horrible, terrible person. Look at how bad I've been.
No, because otherwise you're married to the judgment.
You say that to a child. Just try to say that to a child and get them to learn anything. They're just totally defeated. Right.
And I think that's really important to remember, too, that inside there is that little kid in us still.
Yes.
And we have to need to take care of that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of, and self-talk can be corrected. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people think it can, but it really can't. Because a lot of people, I say to them, you know, you're a hypocrite. You wouldn't talk to anybody else like that. Why don't you treat yourself the way you treat somebody you love? You know, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be interesting and novel? And yeah. then they'll look and say, well, where did I get that double standard from? I said, well, somebody taught it to you because that's not a normal way to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to look down into your childhood without feeling guilty about being disloyal. It's not a matter of being angry at the people who raised you mm-hmm. because maybe they didn't know any better.
No,
but,
they
you
just...
know, you never want to learn anything from anybody who's not in a better place than you are. Right? And as children, you don't have that choice.
That's
but
true.
But as adults, we do.
And that's one of the interesting things. I know before the show we were chatting about, just as I always call it, the fast-paced world, where there is, and you're mentioning just in terms of it, practice makes perfect in terms of relationships. And in this day and age, especially as we get closer to Generation Y, that a lot of people have had multiple relationships. And so sometimes we just don't have those practice. So what are some things that we can do to develop those skills to actually be able to sustain happy, healthy relationships in the long term?
Well, you know, as I was saying to you before the show, you know, I work with people of all ages, mm-hmm. but I work with a lot of people in the 20 to 30 range, and who are so incredibly, you know, discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
Because they try to do everything the society says. They get on dating services, they Twitter, you know, they get on Facebook, they do everything they
yes.
possibly can. The difficulty is that the deepest kinds of communication come from face-to-face contact, where mm-hmm. you can watch somebody's expression, where you can listen to their voice intonation, where you can watch their body language, when you can listen and experience their heart. None of those four ways of communicating happen in 90% of our communication now because it's all just words. And all the research shows that words are only 10% of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, no matter, so what happens is people get, they get very personal, not intimate,
mm-hmm.
but personal when they use email and things like that. They say things very openly. But then when they get together, they don't know how to be intimate because they're not practicing that. You know, when you look at somebody and you're saying something to them and they start to cry, you generally stop
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, what's wrong? You're crying? Are you okay? But when you're writing to somebody, they may cry on the other end of your email, but you'll never know it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they write back to you, they're not crying anymore. So that staggered kind, unless it's your instant messaging, that staggered kind of writing, people just lose each other. Almost, you know, like it's almost a kind of an emotional autism because there's no direct contact. So by the time people get together, they don't know how to do that very well. They're more awkward. They're not practicing intimacy. They're practicing personalness and then depersonalized.
Which is a huge difference.
Oh, it's huge.
And
it's huge.
How?
So then, and then again, people are, you know, they're pair bonding
mm-hmm.
later in life. So they'll go through, instead of one or two relationships, maybe a dozen relationships. Start off wonderful,
more.
You know, slurpy, sucky, lustful, exciting,
mm-hmm.
and then things go wrong, and they don't know how to get through those hard steps, next step of the relationship, when it goes from neon lights to kind of monochromatic before it gets beautiful. Everybody goes through that. They don't know how to get through that, and the media is pounding them with how, you know, they should be sexy and alive and fun and all those things. And so they have a sequence of relationships
mm-hmm.
that fail. So when it finally comes time to being, you know, 32, 33, like, what's the matter? They've just been practicing the wrong way to do things and becoming ultra-dependent on the addictive part of relationships, you know, the hunting, excitement part, and not knowing how to do maintenance at all. And they fall away from each other and very often later say to me, many, many times, I let so many of the good ones go.
Hmm.
You know, I'm not, you know, as I go through life, why didn't I stay? Even people who are married and get divorced and go out in the world will often say to me, why didn't I stay and fix what I had?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we live in, you know, in a throwaway culture, as you well know.
We really do.
Trash bins.
A throwaway culture.
Throwaway relationships also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking people to stay somewhere where they stopped growing and there's no possibility of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are scarring constantly. They're unhappy. But very often, you know, people say, well, this isn't working. I guess, you know, next. And then next isn't any better. It's like a string of islands. This one has coconuts, this one has a lagoon. But maybe the next one will have coconuts and a lagoon. You know, and it's like, wait a minute, you build your lagoon. Where are you going?
And that's
so if I can get people to look at things like, you know, every relationship is an adventure of learning and transformation, and don't you dare leave it. Learn every lesson you came to learn.
And so how do we convince people to do that in this day and age?
Well, you know, I'm in this wonderful position, and I only work with people I treasure, and they come to you wanting to learn. I'd have a hard time on a street corner. Because, you know, for me, being in the same room as somebody who wants that transformation as badly as I want it for them is the core of what regenerates me. It's very difficult to, you know, to try to get people to do something when they don't trust it.
That's true.
You know, that's, I written this in the book. My book starts off with the only true path to intimacy is self-accountability. And it really is.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to start with where you have your power, which is in yourself.
So what are some lessons that we can actually teach our children? So hopefully when they, like say 20 years from now, are in their relationships where they can perhaps have successful relationships.
But just remember, if you had a world of 2,000 children, and the only thing that was going to happen is they would copy every single thing you do. You better be careful what you do. Because kids are like sponges, you know.
They
have their own personalities, they have their own identities, but all they know is what they see.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they can see. And you think those are the only options that exist. There was a time when babies were community babies, and they were handed from one person to another, and nobody was ever tired of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major contributions to divorce is that people in nuclear families try to raise children by themselves, without aunts, uncles, grandparents, you know, without community.
Mm-hmm.
And they get tired. And when they get tired, when all of us get tired, we regress, we act like kids ourselves. So we have children raising children, tired children raising children. I mean, one of the things I say to people, don't come home and say to your kids at night what a hard day you had at work. Nobody's ever going to want to go to work. It's like, just come home and say, oh, it's challenging, you know, difficult, I'm tired, but it's a good tired. And
yeah.
They say, oh, work, I want to do that. So much has to do with what they're experiencing. You know, I love my teenagers. You know, they can spend a whole hour in a bad hair day, but they're so real and so passionate about life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they talk to me all the time is hating the hypocrisy they see in their parents. You know, we'll go to a party, and my parents will be really nice to everybody, and then on the way home in the car, they talk about how people get fat and things like that. And the kids say to me, you know, my parents don't tell the truth to me.
So in other words, we should try and be more authentic and be stronger role models.
Yeah, so much so. I'm not talking about exposing children to everything they're not ready for, but kids really respond to parents who are honestly themselves, even when they're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times I'll say to people when they're young, you know, please give your children a gift of sanity. Don't tell them what they experience is not true. When a child says, I'm not tired, yes, you are. Don't just tell the child you're tired of them. And you please go to bed so I can have some time alone. But don't tell them that what they see and know isn't what they see and know, because consensual reality, gift of sanity, is more important than love.
Hmm.
You know, when somebody tells you they're unhappy and you say, that's a bunch of BS, you know, you can say, I don't see it that way. Don't invalidate another person's reality. It's all they have.
That's so true.
Sure.
In terms of that, in regards to behaviors and with children, with relationships, I had a really big question with you that. In terms of, one of the things you mentioned is like six months later, sometimes we're attracted to certain types of sabotage because it's something we're trying to work out within our own selves.
Yes.
And that will just keep popping up over and over again until we figure out and change the behavior patterns. What happens if we want to continue in a relationship? Would you recommend in terms of, and I'm thinking of an example, like say, for example, say you're dating an alcoholic, and a lot of times they encourage the family members to go to the support groups as well if the alcoholic is trying to stop drinking.
Like an Al-Anon group or something like that.
Yes, and would you recommend something similar to that, depending on which type of sabotage they're doing in the relationship?
Well, the difficulty is that, you know, support groups come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Groups are only as good as their members. My PhD was in group dynamics, so I've run hundreds of groups.
Okay.
And a group is like a family. And so, you know, you can get on the internet, you can look up groups, and some are wonderful and some are not.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you can get support for people who will tell you the truth and love you anyway, that's what you're looking for.
Okay.
So often we pick friends who support our neuroses. So we just keep living, expecting the improbable, because they tell us it's going to happen next time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not. So So you need to pick groups of people who are really going to help you become the person you want to become, not the person you've been.
So in other words, as we start breaking our patterns of sabotage, we may find not only our lovers change, but also our friendships perhaps as well, and
so
who
often.
We bring into our lives.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Very, very often. And when you start to change, you can actually see. I mean, I had a wonderful woman once who had been married to 5 alcoholics, and we worked together a couple of years, and she said, "Have all men stopped drinking?" I said, "No, you're just not beaming them in anymore. You're not putting out those signals. You know, I want to help somebody who's morose and miserable and destroying themselves with addictions. I have the answer because I know how to help you."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in those cases, like Al-Anon, I mean, they can be wonderful because they do exactly what I'm suggesting. They say, wait, it's about you. Clean up your side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put out a different beam. You're a different kind of person. You're not gonna find yourself in those impossible situations that can never change. I mean, addiction is kind of like, you know, kind of like the mafia. It's easy to get into and real hard to get out. I worked 9 years in an alcohol addiction clinic, and, you know, 95% of the people I adored, and I lost a lot of them. It's pretty serious.
It is a very, very serious.
And, you know, and when you love somebody who's addicted, it's like being addicted to someone who's addicted to something else. It's a heartbreak watching someone you love destroy themselves, because it's hard not to take it personally. You know, if I were better, maybe they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're in a triangle with a demon. You can't take that personally.
No, and that's really, really challenging not to take things personally.
Absolutely. But as soon as you do, then it's not about the person anymore or the relationship. It's about your own stuff.
No, it's not. What would you recommend for some... Say we've got a couple and one of them has picked up the book. And let's say, for example, Center Stage, that's the one that they're reading it, and it's like, this is the one that I need to work on.
Yeah.
And as they're going through, say, Center Stage, and they're doing the work that's in there for themselves, is there some things that their partner should be taking a look at, like perhaps why they were attracted to Center Stage and perhaps looking at it and working through this as a couple?
Yes, absolutely, especially if they have attracted someone, or the person is attracted is sabotaging their own behavior by saying, I want to be discovered, you know, I'm a treasure to be discovered, so I'm not going to say anything until somebody asks you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then the person is so busy taking center stage, they never ask you, and then you feel like they've ignored you, and that turns into something that's a heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you, with some center stage people, particularly if they have a lot to offer, you know, it's obviously true in the media, they can get away, they just keep changing audiences, and they could go forever. Well, it's true. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, in this world, maybe it's a good or bad thing when you have a lot to offer. You know, people are going to put up with that kind of behavior even if they feel upstaged by you. But in a long-term personal relationship, if you don't establish up front that you love that person dearly and enjoy their, you know, performance behavior, but you really need to let them listen to you too and don't tell them that, you're going to put yourself in a place where you've practiced behaviors that are very hard to change later.
Which is
scary. You know, I've seen people locked into terrible sabotaging behaviors for years and absolutely leave them behind. I watched them just be liberated, so it's like nobody told them. There's a different way to do this. You don't have to do this over and over again. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if you do want to, if you are in a relationship where you're being counter-sabotaged, like a passive-aggressive person and a bulldog, you know, won't let go, and the other person says, yeah, I'll do anything you want, and then never does it.
Yeah.
And when I say to them very gently, why don't you pay attention to what they do, not what they wish, intend, or promise, the relationship gets very clear very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, people are passive-aggressive sometimes when they're afraid to say no, so they just agree to everything, and they don't predict themselves well. I make them put on their wall, only promise what you can deliver, always deliver more than you can promise. That's where you get out of being passive-aggressive. But a lot of times they don't want to predict themselves because they already feel guilty they're not going to be good enough. So they live under this kind of neurotic illusion that if I don't say anything, it'll be better. So those people, those passive-aggressive people, often attract people who want to control.
Mm-hmm.
They never leave them alone. And you just see this terrible negative spiral. So when people come into me, I really actually like a relationship where I've got 2 saboteurs. It's really fun. It's like, hey, guys, we can really change this.
That makes sense with that. I can see that. What happens if just one of them is the saboteur?
Well, you know, I didn't really address that in the last chapter of my book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question, you know, what if I'm a saboteur and my other person is not?
Mm-hmm.
If they love you enough, they're going to be thrilled to help you change that behavior. because they're discouraged too, and they don't want to leave you, but they can't, you know, they're getting allergic to it and they can't stand it. And what took them once 2 hours to be angry, now they're furious in 11 seconds. And and when you say to them, I really want to change it, they say, great, so what can I do? If they love you, they're going to want to do it. If they're ready to get out, they'll use your confession as their route out. Maybe that's better anyway.
You mentioned at the top of the hour that that there's, because there is the 10 behaviors that undermine love in your book, but you mentioned that there is about 20 that you'd...
At least. You know, what I tell people in the book is use your healing steps for any behavior that's personal to you. Any behavior that started out really okay in the relationship, and over time, you grow to just, you just can't stand it. Like, what if you're involved with somebody, for instance, who's a tremendous social butterfly, and you love the fact that they have a million friends, and you love the fact that they set the social calendar, and then after a while you're just sick of it. You know, you just want to have some peace and quiet, and the person can't stop. But you didn't know that at the beginning. You were actually enjoying it. The seven steps apply to any behavior that in a relationship has gone from being attractive to irritating, same behavior, and the person who was once attracted to it now cannot stand it. So if you have any behavior that fits into that category, these seven steps will work beautifully. Second to the last chapter actually has a whole chapter of really fun exercises. I don't like exercises in books particularly. That's a terrible confession. I generally skip them. So when they said, no, you have to give people things to do, I said, well, I've run a lot of wonderful workshops. I'm going to come up with 77 really fun exercises that people really would like to do, fun to do. And these exercises can actually work in a party. You can sit around and pretend, you know, that you're a pessimist, and everybody can kind of do the exercises together, and all of a sudden people are talking about things. I knew one of those people. God, my uncle was like that, and my aunt was miserable, and she was always trying to get him to do things and feel better, and he could just crash any party and ruin it, you know. And people will start talking about it because everybody has known this. You know, we're all holographs of each other.
Yes.
There's not one of these behaviors that all of us haven't done at some level somewhere. So we recognize them. If we can have that sense of humor and that sense of potential, it's really fun just to talk about them. This is not a gloomy book. This is a book of hope.
And I think that's really important for people to realize as well. So, and I like the fact in terms of encouraging people to talk about things.
Well, because you find, you know, you find each other's souls in the other person, and then all of a sudden it's not scary anymore. That's one of the good things about groups like AA or Al-Anon. You know, they do intend to they can reinforce behavior, but they can also make it so much more acceptable. Like, I'm not alone in the world. Everybody needs to belong somewhere. I mean, you find your tribe, it's like you take a big, deep breath, right? It's, okay, I can talk here.
No, that's
But you have to be careful with groups. You have to, you know, have to go to them. You have to make sure they're your people because they shift all the time and people shift all the time.
So, in other words, even if you go and you do the work, it's still constantly checking because we constantly evolve.
It's not only constant vigilance, but it's having a wonderful sense of relaxation around vigilance.
Okay.
You don't want to be anxious about being anxious or vigilant about being vigilant. When I was in therapy for a long time, so many years ago, you know, I think I said to my therapist, you're asking me to be conscious all the time. He said, well, why would you want to live your life unconscious? I said, oh, that's a good point.
But yet so many of us
do. So you have to kind of not only be conscious and intentional, live an intentional life, you have to not be weighed down by that. You know, it's like learning to drive a car. It's really scary at the beginning, and then it becomes natural. Because you don't want to live your life repeating patterns that hurt yourself or other people over and over again. And it makes you feel bad about yourself. It's not necessary. You know, people can grow. They can transform. We are the only creatures we know that can think about our own thinking. We have this tremendous capability to grow beyond our limitations.
And that's so incredible, like, as human beings that we can do
well,
that.
Well, it is for me. You know, that when people choose limitations, when I know they can do better, I'm so sad for them. Because it's secure to be able to predict, but it's also terrifyingly boring. And, you know, human beings don't do well when they're bored. They get really perverse and mischievous, and they kick fights. They do terrible things. Lots of the fighting in relationships comes just simply from people who are bored. They've chosen security, and they've locked themselves into predictability, and now there's no aliveness anymore.
How do we keep that going? Because one of the things we were talking about at the top of the hour, too, is especially with the boy meets girl, where a lot of times we have a lot of shorter relationships in this, basically in society. And how do we keep that going past the honeymoon period, past just so we can keep those and develop those skills to have long-term relationships?
I mean, it's a wonderful question. Obviously, it's a very deep question. Mm-hmm. How many days do you have? But I can try to answer it as quickly as I can.
We've got 20 minutes.
Well, because it's such an astute question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of the core of where a lot of people are confused and scared.
Mm-hmm.
And all relationships scar, just by naturally scar. The scar tissue, you know, is inert, doesn't take in nutrients, doesn't get rid of waste products.
Yeah.
It's sludgy. So all relationships scar, and then all relationships have the capability to grow beyond, as I said, beyond their limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you continue to grow, if discovery is always there, if you're willing to take those risks to continue to transform as human beings independent of each other, mm-hmm. and the discovery doesn't go away, then the scars will always be less than the total relationship. They become monuments. Remember when we did this. But if a person keeps scarring, the relationship stays with the same limitations, it's eventually going to die.
Wow.
It's just going to die. It's naturally going to die. Of course it will.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say to people, you know, are you done growing? I mean, oh, you're in a relationship. Great. Is that going to be your pit stop? You give the best of yourself somewhere else, you know, and say that now that I have the relationship, this is not fun anymore, so I'll just go have fun elsewhere, right? And then I'll come home and I'll rejuvenate and I'll go back out in the world. I mean, if you did that with a business, or you did that with a, you know, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
When I say to people, where are you at your best? I want them to say, at least some of the time, at home.
Hmm.
But when they tell me, oh, I'm great here, and I'm great here, and I'm great here, and I'm great there, it's like, you can't expect your relationship to be where you go to take a shower and go back into the world and be fun somewhere else, but not at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people, you know, if you're bored, you're probably boring, so maybe you better look inside. You know, have you stopped transforming yourself and growing? Have you given in to the comfort of familiarity and security,
mm-hmm.
where I'm too afraid to grow because I was, you know, I'll shake things up? Well, I can promise you that's not going to last. Especially in today's world where everything is so quick, you know, since the internet was hooked up only 12 mm-hmm. years ago, everything is so fast. People don't have the patience they used to have.
No.
They have much more anxiety than they used to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, panic attacks, we didn't even hear of them. They hardly existed 10 years ago. Now they make up 10% of a doctor's, you know, problems.
Mm-hmm.
Just that everything is so incredibly fast and cutting edge. And, you know, learning how to be in a relationship and love the stillness of it
mm-hmm.
is difficult for people. They mistake that beautiful stillness as, oh my God, you know, we're getting bored, we're not with each other. And because they don't understand how to deepen something, they only understand how to change it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can learn how to do this. The beauty of this kind of way of being is that it's not that hard.
I was just going to ask, how do we learn
it's
to deepen? You read my mind.
You have to be committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, in the way that people are committed to anything that consistently reawakens their feeling of discovery. I mean, I met my husband when I was 14.
I know, I read that at the beginning.
I tell people lovingly, it's like I've been married to 12 different people, all the same man. Now, I've been angry, terribly angry, but I have never been bored.
Wow.
Because every time I get to know him, it becomes somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting. People have said to me, why are you starting to write at this time in your life? You have a great career, a wonderful practice. Because I was beginning to bore myself. Like, I need to stretch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do something that's hard. Because then I'll clear out the cobwebs and I'll figure out what I'm about.
And that brings you back to being you and
Absolutely.
Being exciting and
or
the woman that you fell in love
know,
with.
The difference between happiness and fulfillment, because happiness is just fleeting, but fulfillment is becoming the person you were born to be in this world as best as you know how.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's a transient life. People some people have a wonderful belief that there's, you know, future souls and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an unknown for people. It's a transient life. And so you can say, well, as long as, you know, it's only transient, then I might as well not work hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
But the opposite attitude is, because it's transient, let's work mostly wonderfully hard at it. Right, I mean, it's just, you know, it's the difference between pessimism and optimism. Optimism isn't saying everything's going to be okay. It's like, wow, until it's time, let me live it fully.
Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to people? Because obviously there's boy meets girl, where they start dating, they get exclusive, they move in together, they get married. And when kids come on the scene, how to just keep engaged and not get bored with each other when they start taking on the role of a parent?
Well, the difficulty, of course, is that, you know, as you have children, they bring up all the sorrows and joys of their own childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Very often they're buried, but when you look at a three-year-old who's in trouble, mm-hmm. it brings up all those feelings in yourself. So, first of all, the longer you're married, the more you're likely to bring up childhood roles with each other anyway, because that period of time simulates the long period of time it took to grow up. So people won't usually say in the first month of relationship, you remind me of my father. But 10 years later, man, it just starts to come out. It's like, oh, yeah, I didn't realize that, but you do, because I guess I chose that unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
So children are this marvelous, wonderful energy drain that never stops. You know, childhood is defined as interruption. That's what it's about. Don't expect you're ever going to get anything done. But they're there to teach us. Again, mm-hmm. you know, when we see things our children say and do that copy us, he gives us this wonderful, honest mirror of our own behavior and gives us this opportunity to transform it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn agape, which is selfless love, for the first time, really, when you have to get out of the high chair because your kid is in it and you're crowded. And I don't think you really understand that kind of selfless love before they do that. Now, people don't want to have children. They have to give birth to something,
mm-hmm.
something that takes all of their energy and time and stretches them beyond what they thought they could do. Children do that, but there are people who don't want kids, and they can get it in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn when suffering feels wonderful. When you take a piece of your own flesh and give it away, and not only don't mind the process, so honored to do it. You know, that kind of capability to love that way has to be in long-term personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And very often people don't learn it until they've learned the sacrifice of holding a sick baby all night. You know, when you have no option, no matter how tired you are, but to give that child all the love it needs. You know, there are a lot of times people, you know, try to do that with each other, and when they first have a baby in the first year, the person who is used to having it, usually the father, but not always, used to having that wonderful attention, sometimes feels pretty rejected.
Mm.
Those are the kind of things people should be talking about ahead of time.
Yes.
You know, you shouldn't let life just happen to you. If it happens to you, you're going to fall prey to those old patterns that don't work. But if you're intentional, if you lead an intentional, conscious life, I mean, I have a new book coming out in about 10 months, and, you know, the beginning of that book says, there's probably no greater sweetness in life than being deeply known and still beloved.
Can you repeat that one more time?
There is no greater sweetness in life than being deeply known and still beloved.
I really like that.
But it's because it's so incredibly true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you live your life lying or pretending or being inauthentic. You get someone to love you, you live in constant fear that they'll find out you're an imposter.
Hmm.
Right? And that's no way to live.
No. No, it definitely isn't. Tell us about the book that's coming out next year.
Well, this is kind of just a so incredibly core to human behavior that I'm just thrilled and excited to share it with people. But it has to do with the fact, and as I told you before the show, I'll give mm-hmm. people a little bit of an introduction, that most people
Thank
come
you.
In to see me, unless it's very specific, like an infidelity issue or something, where they have sort of slipped in their relationships. They're fighting
mm-hmm.
a lot, and they're not making love as often, and they don't spend enough time together, and they don't feel treasured by each other. They go on, and you listen deeply to them, and then you say to them, and they say to you, oh, please will you show us and teach us this and give us tools and show us how to communicate. And so I say to them, well, could you communicate at the beginning of your relationship? Oh, my God, we could tell each other anything.
Hmm.
Well, when you had arguments at the beginning of the relationship, what happened? Oh, we resolved them. We found new ways around them. Oh, you know, when you needed to be trusted with each other, could you tell each other anything? Oh, yeah, I was in trouble. Oh, my God, it's like a red telephone in Washington. He was there. And you said, so you're not asking me to tell you how to love. You're asking me to help you find out what you stop wanting to. So the book is about the loss of motivation. But then you leave that relationship, and immediately you know how to do it right again. So it's like, why didn't you do it right where you were?
Mm-hmm.
So the book is teaching people how to come back home. It's more emotional. Because when I say, okay, what were you like What happened the first time you met each other? Here's the continuum you've slipped on. You've gone from excitement to boredom. So how were you excited by her when you first met her? And then I get to talk through the book. Oh, my God. She ran into, and we were playing racquetball, and she ran in and we bumped into each other, and I picked her up. I thought I'd killed her. And then I looked into the most beautiful smile I ever saw in my life, and I've never forgotten it. Well, how are you now? Well, I hear her laughing from the other side of the room, but I'm afraid to let her know I still love her because I'm so hurt. So the book gets a chance to tell you how you slipped, you know, from something so sweet to something that now isn't happening. And how do you get back? When did you drift? You know, why didn't you change it then? What do you still need from each other? How can you come back home? That's what this relationship is about. That's what the book is about.
And I think that sounds amazing. And as you're saying with your personal, like the fact that your husband's been 12 different men.
Oh, at least.
At least. So each time I imagine like...
Right now we sit next to each other in computers, and because he runs an international writing group, you know, critiques other people's writing all over the world, he just tears my stuff apart.
Oh my God.
We have these marvelous fights, you know. And he'll say to me things like, where did you learn all this? And I said, where have you been? But then we fight about it because he likes things clipped. And he's a man, and he wants them clipped and straight and bulleted. And I'm saying, no, 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 they need to be more flowery, more beautiful. So we just fight about it. But in fighting about it, we've actually, even after being married 56 years, done a lot of clarification in our own relationship as a result of writing this together. It's been really exciting.
That is really exciting.
Uh-huh.
56 years.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Well, 56 years and still having somebody who's, you know, your best friend in the world. Somebody you'd I've had lots of opportunity to be with other men, but I've never been willing to give this one up.
I think that's so wonderful, and I hope that there's more people in like that start. Like as we were saying, just like there's so many different relationships in life sometimes, and I love the fact 56 years with the same person and getting to literally get to know them at such a deep capacity and see all the different evolutions.
It's a brand new place right now for us. It's really fun. You know, and I just love the idea that that's possible forever. We only learned about 3 years ago that people can make new neuronal pathways till they die. Prior to that time, research told us that, you know, you just burned off brain cells for the rest of your life. Now they're telling you, no. Maybe you're making railroads with old railroad ties, but you can sure make new railroads. And so, you know, don't give up with that stimulation and that excitement. You know, life ends when you start skating it out. And I've seen people, you know, 20 that way, and I've seen people at 80 who, I mean, many, many years ago, I was at a wonderful retreat, and it was late at night, and I was by myself, and this tall, beautiful man walked in. I was 41, he was 83. He was playing chess with himself, and we started talking. We had this three-hour wonderful conversation about everything, and I was finishing my dissertation up, and he was excited about it. And then we hugged, and I said, I'll probably never see you again, but you are an inspiration to me. You're 83 years old, and you're so alive. And about 6 months later, my kids were graduating college, and he was the keynote speaker. It was Margaret Mead's husband, Gregory Bateson. And I went up to him afterwards, and he said, Randy, did you finish your dissertation? I said, you didn't tell me who you were. I don't believe you ever asked me.
Wow.
And I thought, well, yeah, now that is an inspiration for me. I want to be like that. I mean, he was so alive, and I think he died in the year after that. But it was like one of those fortuitous events where you're introduced to someone who is as alive or more alive than he's ever been, the closer he gets to being, to leaving the planet.
Wow.
That's, you know, you want people like that around because it makes people not afraid.
I'm going to paraphrase Nelson Mandela. Actually, I think it was Marianne Williamson really, really badly, but basically trying to find people that support us and by letting our own light shine.
Yes. So, well, don't you always want to be with a person that you wish you knew where they were plugged in?
Very much so.
And the answer you want is, oh, listen, you can follow me anywhere, but find your own plug. Right? Don't count on me.
That's very true. That's very, very true. Although I do have to say my partner and I do, we are strong for each other at different times, depending
That's
what we're
wonderful.
Going through.
You know, just keep pushing each other. Mm-hmm. Not so much what you want him to be, but the best that he can be for himself, whether that takes him away from you or not.
Yeah.
The greatest way to make love work is to support what makes people feel love.
That makes the most sense.
Absolutely.
So what's next for you? Because you've got the book that has just come out. You've got the book that's coming out next year. And I know you're saying at the top of, and I'm just trying to remember if it was in our pre-show chat or if it was on air, but just that you want to write a book every year. And I think that's fantastic.
I'd love to. The next book I would love to write is like, you know, are you really ready for love? Do you understand what it means? Hmm. Otherwise, you'll have a lot of fun with the adventures you're having, but please don't get them confused.
And I think that's one that really needs to be written as well.
I'm excited about it. It's already forming in my head. It's like it's bursting its way up. You know? And I'd love it. I would also, you know, I wrote a book about 3 years ago that almost got published but didn't, but I'll probably rewrite it someday. It's called The Relationship Bible. It says this is how you meet the right person, and this is how you build a relationship, and this is how you make sure that it doesn't fall apart, and this is how you make sure it stays, it sticks around. It's a really wonderful book of long stories. But, you know, in today's day and age, you know, people like to read something that takes them 11 minutes. So they're so busy. You know, it's like if they can't do it quickly, they just don't have the time for those big blocks of time that get people deeply involved in what matters.
Well, I think we need to figure out a way to make time, because I think it's really important. Because if we don't have love and relationships in our lives and fulfillment, as you said, what do we really have?
Well, you know, the only thing you can leave behind you, and a wonderful man said this, Irvin Yalom, when he wrote a book, I love his writing, and he said that, you know, all you leave behind you is the ripples of how you affect other people. And that's really, truly true, unless you're some kind of marvelous statesman or whatever, and you're going to be in a history book, and then you're still going to be just words on a page, right?
It's so
true. The way you affect the people you love, the way they remember you, you know, how it changes their lives, that's what really counts.
It's a wonderful life, and I mean that as a sincere compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah, like where it really makes such a huge difference, and we don't think about how we affect so many different people.
And you know, you do. I mean, one time I was with one of my little granddaughters, and we were early in the morning at an IHOP restaurant. It was maybe 7 o'clock, and the person waiting on us was a woman in her 60s who had, you know, a half an inch of gray hair that had to be touched up. And she was walking with a lot of discomfort and pain, and she was very tired. And I said to my little granddaughter, I just want you to watch something. So I think our bill was $13.60. So I left her a $20 tip, and I said to her, please buy yourself something special. So she and I went outside, and we peeked through the window. She walked over kind of, you know, tired, and looked down and just did this wonderful double take, and her face broke into this amazing smile. I saw her tuck it away, and I thought, well, I wish she doesn't buy alcohol. That wouldn't make me happy. But it looks like, you know, just for that 1 second to change somebody's life, it's such a joy. So even when you're in a supermarket or wherever you are, and you're really authentic, and they say, well, if you need help, have a good day. And you turn around and you say, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I will. And then they look up at you like, oh, you're a person. That means I am too.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Right? I mean, my husband is a great punter, and one time we were buying something in a maternity shop at Christmas, and this woman said, in a very exhausted way, about 7 months pregnant, do you want me to put this in a bag, or do you want a box for this? And he said, no, I'll just take it peacefully.
Oh.
She started laughing. She said to me, well, Merry Christmas. You know, just that minute, just that moment that you change things from role to role, to person to person, and soul to soul. And pretty soon the world is different. I mean, you can't change the horrible heartaches that happen in Afghanistan and places like that. None of us have that kind of power. But you can do it every second, whenever you can.
And by doing it every second, it makes such a huge, tremendous impact on the lives of everybody.
It has to. If we know that if you change an electron in one place in the world, it will affect the one across the other side of the world, why isn't it also true with love or caring or holding people as treasured?
And that's one thing I did want to, in terms of wrapping up the show, I did want to touch on as well. One of the things I love about your book is, I know it's like when I first read it, it was like, okay, that's about romantic relationships, but I think it applies to a lot of different relationships, and that word relationship in terms of our lives.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. Like whether or not it be with our bosses, whether or not it be with your family members, our lovers, our friends, all of it. Like
absolutely.
Different people in different communities.
If you have any truth from your heart, it's going to apply everywhere in your life.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been absolutely fantastic.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm wide awake. Feels wonderful.
I know, and considering you've been up since
very,
5 in the morning,
easy.
Too.
You're very easy to talk to. You're just a delight.
Oh, thank you. Well, I look forward to having you on the show again, and I can't wait to read your next one. So.
The next book will be out in about 10 or 11 months,
and
then I'll start writing another one this year.
And in the meantime, I encourage all my listeners to actually look at your book, this one, The Relationship Sabotageurs. And am I pronouncing that right? I've been wanting to ask you that all show. So, Sabotageurs. Am I saying that correctly or not?
Saboteurs.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a hard word because it's kind of a French word. Mm-hmm. It comes from the word sabotage.
I like it.
Yeah, there are hardly any similar words to it. Destroyers, like that, but saboteurs can be said in a different way also, because you can sabotage a lot of things without meaning to.
Mm-hmm.
This book really doesn't talk about people who beat people or hurt people. It talks about innocent saboteurs, people who really have all the best intentions in the world and yet end up destroying things anyway.
Mm-hmm. Which I think most of us, I'd like to think, have the best intentions.
Absolutely. 95% of people really want to do well.
No, it's true. Where can people find you? Do you want to share your website?
I have a website, a wonderful website, relationshipsaboteurs.com, to spell it correctly. And it's a fun website because I was a fan, obviously, of Disney, so I wanted a website where you can turn the pages. You can actually turn the pages and get a little bit of an inkling of each chapter, so they can get also a website that they can write to me on that, and I'd be happy to write back.
That's fantastic.
And if they buy it and order it, they can also post a comment, on Amazon or whatever, if they enjoy it, or just write to me directly. I'd love it.
And
very receptive.
Thank you. And the one thing I was going to ask is, I know you do mainly face-to-face in terms of the counseling, but if someone read the book and they really want that extra bit, do you ever do counseling by phone?
I will talk to people by phone because unless I can, unless I can see somebody and know where they are, I can't take care of them if they're in real trouble, and I don't want to promise that I can't. But I certainly, if they would email me, I would certainly write back to them about something, just as long as we understand that they're going to give me the benefit and the treasure of who they are personally.
Mm.
I would give them the benefit of my expertise and experience. But we can't have a real relationship because I can't see them.
And that makes most
something
sense.
That I would love and count on, that I would call therapy. Mm-hmm. It has to be based on that kind of mutual sharing. But in terms of just advice, of course.
Okay. Now, that makes sense because I'm not sure if I've got the stat right, but I believe we get 90% of our information from what we see and 10% from what we hear.
Absolutely. And I'm always available to answer a question or something. I'm happy to do it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
It's so my pleasure. I hope we talk again sometime.
I hope so, too. Well, up next is normally Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour, which he is a very sexy man to be miserable with, but he normally would guide us into the wee hours with his ambient music and a super hot voice. So tonight I will be playing one of his podcasts because he is unable to be with us tonight. But you will stay tuned until next week for our next edition of Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR, where we chat about all things sexy in Van City. Thank you for listening. Have a good night.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support the Vancouver Pride Society in the 2010 Pride season. With great events leading up to Pride, including Gay Day at Playland July 17th, Picnic in the Park July 24th, and the Friday Night Dance Party on Davie Street to kick off Pride weekend. The Pride Parade starts at 12 p.m. on Sunday, August 1st, and the party continues until 5 p.m. at the Pride Festival at Sunset Beach. Join us for an incredible celebration of culture and diversity. For more information and event listings, visit vancouverpride.ca.